the devil awakens.
Maximus wrests his life from the underworld.
Hey boy, what in the world are you doing here?
He was elated with his escape.
I wanted out.
I set out now in a box upon the sea.
Fled in horror when I invited them to be the father of this baby. I decided not to invite him, I'd just do it. And so this is to her, to my daughter, my oldest daughter is named Jeannie, Jean Atelier. And it's called Song for Babio Unborn. Sweetheart, let me do that again. Song for Babio Unborn. Sweetheart, when you break through, you'll find a poet here, not quite what one would choose. I can't promise you'll never go hungry, or that you won't be sad on this gutted, breaking globe. But I can show you, baby, enough to love, to break your heart forever. There was some of the things I'm going to delve into here and there, I will delve into because of conversations that came up after in between the panels. Somebody was asking me about Charles and Muse and all that. Charles asked me one night, we talked a long time about how does a woman see the Muse? Is it male? Is it female? Is it any, what is it? And that went, you know, we talked, but a few years later in 76, he'd been dead a while, I was teaching him at Naropa Institute in Boulder, and I was using that selected prose that was around then, selected writings or whatever it was. And years later, I always do this. I write in what Robert Duncan used to call the roomy pages. He wrote them in his roomy. Lots of roomy pages, he said. But I just write things in books and often dialoguing with whoever I'm reading. But years later, I found this, and it was clear it was part of the Loba poem sequence. And it was about that question of Muse. And it was addressed to Charles. But we can't turn it around. Turn. No way, no way, beloved, you can become for me, Muse, as I. But we can't turn it around. Turn. No way, no way, beloved, you can become for me source, as I for you, Muse, mystery. Those the elegant long fingers, traceries of the eternal breath in your touch, in the rhythm of love. No way, beloved, that you lead me home. So must I be place of my seeking as I am ground for you. Spoor and old trail lie on me, map of my flesh, and quest ends for me, as for you, at this not fresh rose. And that was an answer to someone who asked me about that. I wanted to read that. When I was thinking of coming out here, the first thing that I thought of that I wanted to find and read was a poem I wrote. I lived on the coast of... I had told the story today about when I was moving out west and Charles said, go and join the new Pleistocene man. If I were younger, I would be coming too. This was in 67. And I lived on the coast, northern coast of California, in a town called Marshall, which had a sign that said very proudly, population 50, elevation 15 feet. But it had a very famous, we were right on the tidal flat, so the tide came in under the house, and we were sleeping on futons on the floor, so the tide was in our dreams, and the bird migrations all year. This was in 73 to 78, I lived there. And we had a terrible drought for several years while I was there. And during the drought, at one point, we had no water because our holding tanks, a whole family of raccoons died trying to get at water. And there were like, a lot of it is described in the poem. And with that, as folks here have experienced in other ways, came the real estate speculators, of course, buying up whatever, et cetera, et cetera. So this was like written as a letter to Charles during that. And it was started off because in the Butterick magazine, Olson, that was coming out all the time, one the issue that was around that I had just received, or around that time received, was had this lyric that was so, it was very beautiful and was very un-Charles-like in its lyricness. It began, "It shall be known as the spring of the fire pinks." And that set the, somehow set the start off. I'm not going to explain whatever else is missing from here. There were stone circles across the street from where I lived on the hill. You could see the point of Inverness Point so that you could see the ocean and the bay at once, and I would sleep out there with... There was clearly one stone that was like a headstone higher than the others, and I would sleep there and watch the stars come up behind me. That's the only other thing I can think of that I can tell you ahead. It's longish. For Charles, from Marshall, in it, Marshall being the place, for Charles from Marshall in a year of drought. One. It shall be known as the spring of the brown hills, buried as we are, hook, line, and sinker in the soft of each other's flesh, spring of dead grasses, and we teeter on the edge of silence. The moon, thick with time, falls down between the hills. The dreams, when we catch them, are mangy, spring of thin horses, and we teeter on the edge of knowable night, spill over like stars, catapult. No wildflower perfume, the air thick only with an occasional cry, love cry or shriek, turn, tumble over familiar cliffs into new Pleistocene madness, under gibbous moon, over left shoulder, the great glacier snapping its jaws. Hey, anybody got any information where this stone is supposed to go? Where put it, a big stone? Keep the whole thing turning somehow. Paucity of species, one probable cause of ennui. And the stars become a legend, mythology, perpetually lost beyond the blanket of smog. Two. I am accurate as day's ending, punctual time and place as setting sun, and the hopes I chronicle divergent as the loves of Marie de France. Brine is at the bottom of the dish. You were right, old Father Merlin. And when do we get to fall asleep in her arms? Was it Nimue of good voyage, of high trips, the live her took you down? All I get to chase are he-birds, fine plumage, mud at the bottom, mud and brine at the heart. Shall I come to rest like you in the crook of her arm? No other love will suffice. No androgyne angel lulls me. And he, the hooded one, black cape and falcon face, the Herm does not arrive. Only the welcoming water laps at my house. Salt water. So I address you, knowing you understand the process thickens as the mist, which brings no secrets. No news, you'd say. Energy falters here. Talk falls from Flamel to Tesla. No answers. And the grass is eaten before it grows. The clams have gone with the jazzmen, and the perch and shark only in the gill nets, skinny. We pick at the bony meat. I never wrote you, living, would you have answered? A nest of magpies and bare windswept branches is how I see us here, hanging in on these waters. The light of Avalon is fading from the bay. No kidding, it was there, you could see it. Not stoned, could see it for some years, could hear that kind of music. New Pleistocene, fish, music, boats. The islands of the Pacific were ours, yours. Do you sleep sound in her arms? In that battered house? Do the robes of Nimue smell of ambergris? Three. Hawk, wolf, and circle, Kirk, do you see how we wheel? I reel from this time and place. New Albion, not the fishing. Fish too, but the hope drove us. Here the monad would dance. Net of the stars flung over, dreaming hills, land the shape of waves, and the sky quiescent, except for the winter months. Circe, my friend, stone circle on these hills, and the mound at Tamales Point from which you can see ocean and bay, whales leaping, journeying, she of good voyage, drunk, stumbles against you, red fingertips, red laugh. Is this Circe's land or Dee's? Tesla, that lame fool seeking the silver lizard, or Don Juan sewing its eyelids. Come across, wind keens, shrieks, or is still. Not the bluster and active sky of a Cape Ann day. Squid, oysters, parchment, octopus, leopard shark, sand shark, ling cod, cabazzoni. The south wind could break the drought, but the damage to the land, root systems broken, runoff, should it rain, realtors' signs, ex-army helicopters, the bright Arthurian barges whose pennants droop becalmed, whose clarion no longer heard at the tavern. And I have seen under starlight, under full zenith of the moon, how it is translated yet the same. And shall this come no more? No saxophone, stately movement Friday night, peculiar elegance of rags and mud. No psilocybin this year on these broken hills. Hawk, wolf, maid, hag, and matron, I scramble, whirl, racked in the torque. The sudden shift of power, and mad for bread, for touch. I didn't get an answer to my letter. I have to say that It was believed that Sir Francis Drake sailed into Tomales Bay, and Dee had given him, John Dee, Elizabeth's astrologer and magician, had given him Mercator globe that he'd acquired when he was teaching on the continent, and told him he would be finding the New Albion. And so it was, you know, there was that whole, and I was writing an introduction for the hieroglyphic monad at the same time that I was doing this, which is, anyway. So I wanted to read that and one other longish poem that happened about almost, well, 8 years later. I was teaching at, but I think I'll do something else in between, something a little more, okay. This is a new edition of the Revolutionary Letters, which just came out in 07 and has new ones in it. So that's nice, isn't it, Michael, when all of a sudden they reprint something and you can add the new and whatever. This is a revolutionary letter that was not printed before. Somebody wanted a piece for the millennium, for an issue of a little magazine. It was all going to be millennium. So I wrote this. It's called In the Wink of an Eye, Millennial Notes. It goes kind of fast. If Iliad and Odyssey encompassed two sides of the great divide, great break with the mythic and the rise of the wily, the Polymetus Odysseus is still a sacred king, though living in the West, and with shards, shades of the old time still clinging to his robes, degenerates into Pius Aeneas, the careful old fart, practical family man, and we are lost to ourselves for 1,000 or more years till the aching dullness is too much to bear and we emerge into Tantra, the way of ecstasis, Rumi to Vidal, and the dull party gets freaked and burns up Provence, and old Dante arises to put a cap on the fire, impose some order on ecstasy, and Willie the Sheik tries to see, could they coexist? Ecstasy and order? Harmony and God-seeking freakout? And he doesn't solve it, but he makes some kind of trembling equation. And Blake says, fuck all this. Fuck coexistence. We do need a new spiritual order, and proceeds to make one, sweeping the romantics along in his wake. And Baudelaire agrees, but won't come out to play. Tries to make a new order inside the shell of the old, but Rimbaud sees with his seer's eyes that we are already in it, the spirit, and stark raving naked. We'll have to leave everything behind, and at first he is thrilled, but then he cops out. It's too chilly in outer space with no clothes. He'd rather die a sleaze butt, but human, for God's sake. And there is only one place to go from there, the Lama. The new spiritual order for real, a Western terma complete with crazy wisdom, holy books, and sometimes, just sometimes, the American cats move in on it. They don't know from order. They don't know from clothes. Naked in Space is okay with Melville. Whitman don't know from Leave Behind, blasted with vastness and forlorn with blood sickness. This is more than existential crisis, just space. And Pound and Olson bring history along for the ride, the ocean currents and how we follow them so that Troy falls again, or it doesn't this time. Doesn't this whole thing happen because Troy fell? Men stopped wearing perfume and silk. Brightness fell from the air. The Lady of Heaven got bored, went underground. It is a crisis of spirit, a leap out of it, beyond it. Our most recent shot, just space, equals the Lama. Hermetic definition, a different color, a different light in the mind. And I'll follow that with a late revolutionary letter, number 91. I mean, this book, when it first came out, I think it had 40 or something. Anyway, which is for Garrett Lansing. I, quotes the word I with one letter. I vanish as the witness always vanishes after the fact. The Buddha is the thus come, but the mark of the Magus is to go. Same word. Thank you, Garrett, for everything. So, I was going to read some of the letters that came on, the revolutionary letters that came on the heels of some of these talks, all-night talks with Charles in the 60s. This one is called Notes for an American History. Over and over we look for the picture in the cloth, man standing idle and tall against horizon, savage landscape. We stare, poverty-struck, at New England pewter and farmhouse window, quote, Adams, Jefferson, Hugh, map of the sacred meadow. This was the land we were promised, wasn't it? Is Fresno, New Jerusalem? Where is Dallas? How would Olson, Pound, Tom Paine explain Petaluma? Over and over, Kirby Doyle, mad, tells tale of his grandfather walking out of the desert, his wife and two sons waiting in a wagon. He took the mule. And the boats in Gloucester, Newfoundland, and Greece, the same. The wood carved in Alaska and New Guinea, the same. Over and over, we seek that savage man, sufficient and generous. We find Rockefeller, Nixon, sad letters of Jefferson mourning the ravaging of mound builders' land, requesting his daughter not to neglect her French. We, over and over, seeking line and form, gold leaf as in Siena, outline as Blake. We sit on shifting ground at the edge of this ocean, as far from Europe as you can get, and watch the hills flicker like dream skin. Short one, all through America, from the same time, all through America, all I see and find is Indian America, the forms and shapes of Great Turtle Island. And one that came up somehow or other in the panels today, I thought I'd read. It's an early one. These were started because a friend of mine, Sam Abrams, who was a poet back in New York then he moved to Rochester later, rented a flatbed truck and a generator, and we all went out all over Spanish Harlem, the East Side, Harlem, everywhere we could. Radical folk singers, actors, poets, performing all over the streets. And my poems were not exactly street poems. They were things that, like this one here that's in the back of the book, Goodbye Nkrumah. And yet, where would we be without the American culture? Bye Bye Blackbird, as Miles plays it in the 50s. Now, you don't hold the people on a street corner with that. But So I thought of this book when I first was writing it as guerrilla theater, really, and it really still remains that, mostly. This was one of the early ones. Who is the we? Who is the they in this thing? Did we or they kill the Indians? Not me. My people brought here cheap labor to exploit a continent for them. Did we or they exploit it? Do you admit complicity? Say, we have to get out of Vietnam, or we have to get out of Iraq. We really should stop poisoning the water. Look closer. Look again. Secede. Declare your independence. Don't accept a share of the guilt they want to lay on us. Man is innocent and beautiful, and born to perfect bliss they envy. Heavy deeds make heavy hearts, and to them, life is suffering. Stand clear. These were being sent out, like I had done for the bear. Somebody was doing Liberation News Service and was doing this for me and for many of us. As I wrote a bunch, I would send them to Liberation News Service and 200 really radical, really underground newspapers all over the country and Canada and some in Europe, too, would have this work. And some of it got printed everywhere all that time. And I'm seeing if I put these little green things and some others, but I'm not certain which ones they really wanted to be. It's a little later, and this is new to this edition, and it's short. But it came direct and whole from a dream, and it almost sounded like Charles's voice itself. It's a dream poem about Reagan and company, September 24th, 1981. When we are dirt poor and no longer have our mountains for shelter, when we are conquered and cannot go to our forests for comfort, when we are hungry and our valleys will no longer sustain us, then we will see these men in their true light. Not that different day to day, week to week. I want to read a newer one, but it's too new for this. It's called War Haiku Lebanon, July 2006. And it's three-line poems. Even an hour of this would be too long. White phosphorus. Great lords of the sea, it is Tyre they are burning, that harbor. Don't ask why I have bad dreams. Ask why if I don't. So, how are we doing? Oh, we have a little bit of time here to do some other things. I would like to read some things that are... I would like to read a couple of things that... Well, this is a very pretty new revolutionary letter thing. I wrote it this May. I was at Cabrillo College, and while I was waiting my turn, I scribbled this. It's a, you know, the kids there are pretty mad. But, you know, they're mad, but then, well, I'll just read it. I put the title on later because they didn't know who I was talking about. Maybe I'll leave the title off until I finish. They didn't know who or what I was talking about. And if you were living in the enemy's house, wife and kids there too, and guarded, all of you, by known assassins, how hard would you fight, do you think, for what were only, after all, dreams? Knowing there's no way you'll actually win, what would you be willing, do you think, to pay to see them, those beautiful women, walk out of there whole, not widowed or orphaned, no matter what you believed? How much would you do? And they all looked, frowned at me, and so I put the title on, which is "And About Obama." There's something I wanted to. So in 1985, I gave the three lectures that were being given once a year at SUNY Buffalo on Charles Olson. And so I've read through Maximus again, which I hadn't done in many years, and then I read through Maximus again with reading Butterick's notes alongside, or having them alongside. And I can't say this is directly related, but I wrote it while I was typing up these lectures, while I was at Buffalo. I read the stuff, I went to Buffalo, and I typed on the days when I wasn't giving the talks. And at the end of the third talk, I wrote this. It's called Rant. You'll hear Charles all over it, but there's a lot of other quotes in it, too. How many can you find? How many of the apples in this drawing? Rant. You cannot write a single line without a cosmology. A cosmogony laid out before all eyes. There's no part of yourself you can separate out saying, this is memory, this is sensation, this is the work I care about, and this is how I make a living. It is whole. It is a whole. It always was whole. You do not make it so. There's nothing to integrate. You are a presence. You are an appendage of the work. The work stems from, hangs from the heaven you create. Every man, every woman carries a firmament inside, and the stars in it are not the stars in the sky. Without imagination, there is no memory. Without imagination, there is no sensation. Without imagination, there is no will, desire. History is a living weapon in your hand, and you have imagined it. It is thus that you find out for yourself. History is a dream of what can be. It is the relation between things in a continuum of imagination. What you find out for yourself is what you select out of an infinite sea of possibility. No one can inhabit your world, yet it is not lonely. The ground of imagination is fearlessness. Discourse is videotape of a movie, of a shadow play. But the puppets are in your hand. Your counters in a multidimensional chess, which is divination and strategy. The war that matters is the war against the imagination. All other wars are subsumed in it. The ultimate famine is the starvation of the imagination. It is death, to be sure, but the undead seek to inhabit someone else's world. The ultimate claustrophobia is the syllogism. The ultimate claustrophobia is it all adds up. Nothing adds up, and nothing stands in for anything else. The only war that matters is the war against the imagination. The only war that matters is the war against the imagination. The only war that matters is the war against the imagination. All other wars are subsumed in it. There's no way out of the spiritual battle. There's no way you can avoid taking sides. There is no way you can not have a poetics, no matter what you do. Plumber, baker, teacher, you do it in the consciousness of making or not making your world. You have a poetic. You step into the world like a suit of ready-made clothes, or you etch in light. Your firmament spills into the shape of your room, the shape of the poem, of your body, of your loves. A woman's life, a man's life, is an allegory. Dig it. There's no way out of the spiritual battle. The war is the war against the imagination. You can't sign up as a conscientious objector. The war of the worlds hangs here, right now, in the balance. It is a war for this world to keep it, a veil of soul-making. The taste in all our mouths is the taste of our power, and it is bitter as death. Bring yourself home to yourself. Enter the garden. The guy at the gate with a flaming sword is yourself. The war is the war for the human imagination, and no one can fight it for you, and no one can fight it but you. The imagination is not only holy, it is precise. It is not only fierce, it is practical. Men die every day for the lack of it. It is vast and elegant. Intellectus means light of the mind. It is not discourse. It is not even language. The inner sun. The polis is constellated around the sun. The fire is central.
Set out now in a box upon the sea.